Well, he's not quite a coffee asshole, but he's still an asshole about coffee.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
This is the Journey for Java podcast, a show about coffee for people who enjoy coffee and like listening to stories about people, places, and things involving coffee.
Seriously, only an asshole would make it this complicated.
It's the Journey for Java podcast.
You want some coffee?
Yeah, make it fresh pot.
A Brenton on Tour podcast show.
Fresh pot!
About what else? Coffee.
Coffee is the number one drink in the world. Everybody drinks it. Even little kids in Mexico drink coffee.
Well, I'm not a little kid in Mexico, okay?
Here's BD.
Welcome, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Brenton on Tour Journey for Java podcast. We are going Secret Service in coffee with fellow Blundell Network podcaster and overall great rad dude, John Guarneri. How are you, sir, from the Spirit Talk podcast?
That is the first time in a while I've heard someone pronounce my name correctly.
You know, in this neck of the woods, we spend all of our money on research and people to make sure that we get it right, because we want our guests to come back. You know what I'm saying? It's good.
No, that was perfect, and I'm doing well. Thank you.
Fellow blue microphone person, fellow everything. We connected last, I guess, about a year ago now through our mutual friend, Hoogie, who was like, my buddy John's got this great YouTube channel and all the rest of it, and we should have him on the show. At that point, it was getting him on Blundell Network and all the rest of it, but you came on, and you've been building out accordingly, and your show is growing, and your views and everything is going up. It's really awesome. So I thought, listen, my journey for Java started with a gentleman who I toured with, who has a similar background to yours, which I'll let you dive into, and had some access to amazing coffee around the world, and I've never looked back. So John, give us a little background on you, and we'll get into the coffee stuff.
So my name is John, and I went to a military college in Vermont called Norwich University, and I did the Navy ROTC for 4 years. When I graduated in 2004, I kind of put all my eggs in a basket to kind of go into the Secret Service. And the reason why I chose that is because I had a friend the year before that went in. He was on the motors unit, travels the world on his motorcycle, guiding the limousines and the monster, the beast, all around every country. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna put all my eggs in this basket because I love the idea of security, protection, and I love the idea of being the federal government. And so I did that once I graduated after seven and a half months of extensive training, backgrounds, firearm training, everything encompassed with the whole ordeal there. I did that up and through 2014 under the Obama administration. And the last campaign, which would have been in 2012, I was only home around 30 days that year. And it was kind of crazy because 30 days of a whole year on top of just what I was doing at the time kind of mentally kind of burnt me out. I eventually ended up going through a divorce. And in 2014, I met my CEO now, Chris. And I was basically saying, hey, let's stay in touch. The minute I want to jump ship and go private, we're going to do that. So in 2014, I did that. And so I've been private. I've been the CEO, the COO of Silver Spear Security since then. And we have offices in Orlando and Los Angeles and opening one up in Massachusetts and Nevada. And we do everything from bands to from Nickelback, Shinedown, Post Malone, Justin Bieber, all the way through red carpet events, cruise lines, all this, anything security related, we try and do it. Mm-hmm. If you get it. And last year at the onset of the pandemic, which I think affected everyone, I launched Spear Talk podcast out of boredom, maybe out of my urge to keep learning somehow. I didn't want to go back to school per se or do an online degree. I wanted to pick random topics that maybe 1 week it's martial arts, 1 week it's human trafficking, or next week it's mental health. And so this podcast kind of branched into what it is now. And for me, it's like a living and breathing thing that I love putting the time in and seeing the what the outcome is, how it affects different people.
Yeah. And you, that's a bit of an, I see a lot of guys in my world, concert world, obviously, that are security guys that have come from that Secret Service background. They're either working for a company or that was their, you know, they were a part of that. So a lot of guys, one one of them who I met actually started my coffee journey around the world because he had access to some of the best coffee in the world. And that's kind of what got the my journey for coffee going. But in the process, learning about all the different things that you guys do. And it was quite fascinating to me. Did you find the private sector, like moving on from like, say, the Obama administration and moving on to something different, do you find starting your own company was absolute no-brainer, the way to go? Or did you just retire from Secret Service? Like, how did that kind of, where did that decision come in?
I basically, after that last campaign in 2012, I was only home for whatever those 30 days. And I was kind of burnt out, not from the idea of security and protection, but I guess the actual politics, because that career like literally engulfed in politics, left, right. It was just absolutely crazy, just political issues and stuff that doesn't, so I'm not talking left or right or donkey or elephant. It was just everything in between that I didn't want to be a part of. And so when I met Chris, which is oddly enough backstage at a Nickelback show in DC, I was basically, hey, let's kind of figure out a way, if I do want to leave the federal government, what we could kind of rebrand whatever he was doing at the time into Silver Spear Security, which it is now. And so when I did that, it was kind of a weight off my shoulder because it was almost like a fresh start, but in the sense where I was still doing what I love and continue to love and trade to do and all this stuff, but it was a different, it felt like a different home for me. Now, as you know, Brenton, there is politics and music in this industry and stuff, but it felt like a different politics. And these politics we're part of now, these are a lot easier to deal with as opposed to the federal government.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, really, it's about keeping the artist safe. I mean, things have changed given what's happened in the world. Obviously, you guys have to be down on everything, every aspect of security, from terrorism to all the rest of it. So I commend you on that side of it because it's a super competitive space. There's a lot of security companies. Not everyone does it well. So you got some great clients. So clearly, you guys do. So good for you on that side of it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if I do something, say I'm an architect or a doctor, I'm just a single stay-at-home mom or father, I'm going to be the best person at what I do. And I think where people fall is that they tend to just take stuff for granted and like, oh, I do this job, I'm going to do it just for a paycheck. Well, nothing to take against those people that do security for a paycheck. I get it. It pays the bills, feeds your household. I do what I do because I love what I do. Mm-hmm. And that's where the difference is, people who are successful in security, those that are not.
And it's so important. It's such an important aspect of these shows. It's the first priority on tour, keeping everybody safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
keeping everybody safe. And the second priority for me is coffee. And trying to find the best coffee in the world.
I tell you what, because I'm one of the first people up in the morning at the venue. I roll in with if we're rolling with a band, I get out, I check out. But the first thing I do is literally, and we at the Shine Dub Bus, we carry a basic Keurig, and all the guys, I think Barry and Eric, we're the more over the pour over type of, we'll go get coffee, like it's a really cool place that's not a chain. But on the bus, the Keurig will suffice. Dunkin' Donuts, Tim Hortons, if we're in Canada. Starbucks, like it's whatever, get the coffee, good up. But when I get off the bus, I literally go to catering. That's the first thing I grab is a cup of coffee, and then kind of just walk around the venue and just check on Charlie, a stage manager or production or whoever, and just kind of make my rounds. And it's like therapy, man. Whatever it is, like that catered coffee could be the utter worst, but it sets your day up too, right? I don't know if that's like a placebo effect where it's just like, oh, it's black, or it's got sometimes I put like weird creamer in there just if I want to get crazy, but a nice black coffee with a splash of sugar, like there's just something to it where it just triggers the day off.
I remember starting in Italy. Mine started in Italy. So my buddy, you know, fellow agent, was like, you know, I had a espresso backstage in Italy, and I was like, oh, okay. So this is what it's all about. And then when he discovered I was new, then every single place we went around, you know, the world, oh, I've got this, I've got that, I've got that. It was amazing. So you're with Barry from, you know, Shine Down. He's got Spartan Brews. He's got his own coffee brand. He's a coffee head. So it's your job to keep the band safe and the rest of it. But while you're out on your days off, one of the things that I want to I think stress to some of the people that you guys really don't get a lot of days off. Like when the band is going, you're going. Yeah. Like, and wherever the band is, you know,
before COVID, like you're doing 200, 250 shows a year. And so travel days, in European markets, there's tend to be more days off because the bus rides are longer and stuff like that. So when we have a day off, and some of the best cities, the experiences, memories I have are day off in Omaha or, in Oregon, a couple of spots in Racine, Wisconsin, there's a couple of places in New York, and all these different cities and outlets where I had a great coffee experience there. And if I've never been there, if I've never brought like Barry there, like we'll go there. And so our day is predicated on coffee. wake up in the hotel. Here's everyone's hotel keys, shower, lobby 30 minutes. And we're going to go find the local coffee shop, grab some lunch, maybe a comic book store, and just kind of do something to do. But the day starts with that coffee. And I think if you've never been to a city or you've never been to a certain coffee shop, when we're Googling, looking where to go, there's just something about walking to a coffee shop for the first time and just seeing people like these mom and pop stores with the big presses and the smell of the aroma coming out there. It's just something really like fun and therapeutic about it.
And I liken it to, you know, people that are on whiskey journeys or wine journeys. I mean, I'm sure they get the same dopamines when it comes to it. But when the coffee and how it brings everyone together, it changed everything. And it changes everything as you, the more you discover, because that's kind of like when you go to Barcelona, that coffee experience is different than Australia, or it's different than South America. And that's the beauty about trying to find these amazing coffee spots around the world. We'll get into individual brands and regions down the road, but what is your favorite coffee discovery so far?
So I've always loved, growing up in an Italian family, my dad's side's all Italian, so we'd always cook like the espresso on the stovetop and that little
What's that process?
Isn't it where you just put the water in the bottom and then you put that little
thing mocha on top? Did you learn this specifically how to do this?
Watching my grandparents and uncles and aunts do it. That's where like I was like, what is that? Like, why can't you just do like the regular make 10 cups of coffee in a stupid pot, Mr. Coffee? And like, no, this is like traditional, like here's the grinds and all this stuff. And so I've always loved espresso, cappuccinos, lattes, all that stuff. But I was actually a day off, I think in Poland. Or actually, it might have been Melbourne, Australia. And I was with my friend Gorditi, who is basically, he's part of the Nickelback camp, the backstage stuff. And he's a huge coffee nut. And he's like, hey, have you ever had a pour over? And I'm like, what? You know, it's like a pour over, like an Egyptian or a Nicaraguan or whatever, name any other country that sounds whatever. And I'm like, you know, I never have. So he took me to this place that he'd been to before. And I walk into, I feel kind of intimidated by it because I'm just like, dude, what would I order? Like, can I get a medium regular? And it's like, what? So he orders everything for us. We do like the basic black coffee with a nice, and I think what I've noticed too with these experiences, a nice thing of like Pellegrino or sparkly water just to cleanse the palate.
Yeah.
But he brings over this Egyptian pour over and they do the process and we drink it. I'm like, I feel extremely wired, but just that process, and him telling about these beads and how different regions have these different – I wasn't that versed in it. And so now 5 years later, now at least I could go into a store and be like, I might not know the apparatus that makes it per se or whatever, but I could smell that bead and probably tell you what region of the world it's from just because I'm so in tune to that stuff now. Sure. And it's kind of cool, man. Like I just – who would have thought that coffee would be like this really cool type of thing?
It's the universal language. And I'm telling you, it's because I don't know if you drink, John. I haven't drank in a few years. I haven't drank in a few years. So for me, I replaced it with coffee from the standpoint of like I used to go and try to find a great pub. And I used to go to try to find, you know, the best whiskey and the best this and the best that. But I just, you know, it didn't work for my touring schedule. And just overall, I changed it. And coffee replaced it, really. That journey every single day to kind of wake up and kind of go to it was quite something to your point, making it, you know, how your days off change and your days off are now trying to find the best coffee in the city and things. I just never thought I would ever be part of that. But I like to go out on adventures and look around towns and stuff. And it starts with me. My day starts by trying to you know, tag and geotag where that is, where it's the best reviewed coffee in the city, and then go there.
Well, that's why I like your social media, because you would tag like those cup of coffees and stuff, and be like, oh, cool. Like, there's a couple I took note of. Like, dude, I don't even know where how he found this place. And so for me, that's almost like a geocache for me next time I'm in that city in Canada, where it's like, I got to go here. And the thing about when I walk into, like, I'm going to use European markets more, because that old lifestyle, that old, like, I just find something, I really resonate with those old walls. But when you go to those old coffee shops, can you imagine the conversations that have happened over a cup of coffee at those tables? Or it kind of blows my mind. It, like, we're talking world leaders and history altering stuff over a cup of coffee. And that for me is just, it's the most purest form of conversation. Right. And even if you don't drink coffee, I can still have this conversation with you, with me drinking coffee, you not, or vice versa. I just still feel at home at a coffee table.
And now, the back to the Secret Service side of things. You worked on the Obama administration and a few things. I won't, you know, we won't have to dive into specifics per se. But what's an average team number of that? Like, how many guys are you working with in that regard? And do you all, do your days off all change together? Do you all kind of have the same assignment? Do your assignments change every week? And then in that particular case, have you become close with some of the administration and that side of it? And then they're like, hey, on our days off, we're all going to go try to find amazing coffee. Or are they all too busy running around?
Like, no, one of the cool things with the shift work is that whether it's shift A, B, C, or day shift, night shift, whatever it is, you get to start working with this core group of men and women that are basically living the same life you are. Now, some have family, some have kids, some are travel 2 hours, some are have other stuff going on. But while you're working, your main job is your job. And when it comes to days off and for traveling and all this stuff where, hey, every Tuesday night or every Wednesday night, we have these days off. We all tend to plan to organize and hang out together, whether it was with coffee or go get a drink or have dinner or hang out with our families, because you start building those bonds with that core group of people as you move from location to location, shift to shift and stuff like that. So it's teamwork is essential for that, obviously. And days when you're having those long nights when there's nothing going on, it's 3 a.m. And someone from the staff will bring you a cup of coffee to keep you awake. Or so it's really cool. And again, coffee flows through that place like the Nile River
at times. I'll bet. But whether it's good or not, I've heard there's some presidents in the past that have sent minions out to find them the best coffee in the world. But I did you ever experience that? Like, do you have, I'm not going to get in. Like, I mean, you worked with the Obama administration, but did you work closely with the family from the standpoint of hey, John, go get me a coffee or, you know?
Yeah, never like that. I mean, I could tell you what, like, in terms of like when you see the kids or Michelle or the mother or Barack's mother, in core staffers, whether it was Brennan, McDonough, Pete Souza, the house photographer, those guys, like, they all, you knew what they were drinking, whether it was a splash of cream or some of these staffers would do like when you have like the Christmas parties, eggnog coffee, but they'd bring out like these tiramisu flavors and holiday flavors and stuff where it's like a little too sugary for me. But there's never a time where it's like, hey, we need to go get this type of coffee per se. I don't necessarily think he was that type of president where coffee was the number one thing. Now, he's also, which is kind of endearing, because he could drink a cup of coffee from McDonald's or Potbelly's near the White House or some really cool coffee in a country with a world leader. So that's what I love about coffee is that, yeah, you probably always want to have the best, but even when you don't, it's just the experience over that cup of coffee that I think matters.
Do you miss it? Not coffee.
I don't know. Like, I guess I get a different rush of what I have to do doing what I do now. But I guess if I missed anything, like just traveling in the C-17s or C-5s or taking, I mean, there'd be times where just the pictures, I guess, like, the, because now we're talking super big teams, we're there's 10 or 12, your core team is working. Whereas now it's myself and another individual sometimes. So
sure,
I miss that type of whatever, but I'm also fortunate to work with great venues and their staff too. So it kind of makes up for the lack of,
yeah,
kind
of. I mean, there's definitely a new thing now with it's a different level of responsibility. It's a different level of everything. And you get to bring a lot of that thing into the mix now, and hopefully we'll all get back to it soon. You know, down the road, you know, there's a bit of rumbling happening of a handful of shows popping up. I'm hoping obviously by this time next year, we'll all be in some form or another of working again, you know.
I've done 20, 25 drive-in shows with Smiths & Myers, which is the offshoot of Shinedown through the pandemic, right. Some indoor, some obviously drive-in outdoor stuff. And I got end of May, I got two more weeks with them. We got 11 shows and some indoor, some outdoor. And then July and August, well, there's 10 Shinedown shows booked, which are big outdoor fairs and festival type things. And some stuff scheduled for the fall, like big festivals that were rescheduled for the last year or so. So I think what's crazy is it's the whole, the border shutdown too. It's just so weird that two nations that I would say are, in terms of, you guys obviously have more snow and prairies, but in the mountains, but like, it's just weird for me because my girlfriend's Canadian and I haven't seen her in a year and 3 months because of the shutdown. So I just hate how the whole shutdown's made everything political and how it affects people like Hoogie. They're going to cross the borders, and then when they get home, they have to live in a hotel for 3 weeks, or the trucking industry, or all these industries and the arts affected by, I don't know. Like, I think there's too many politics in play there. I'm all for safety and what needs to be done right, but I don't think a lot of people realize the mental health this is affecting on people too.
It's a big deal. I mean, it's something I touch on quite a lot. It's very prominent in our business as far as people struggling with mental health when they're touring. And a lot of people don't understand that the touring keeps the mental, like keeps them balanced. So when you remove that from the equation, you know, there's been a heavy struggle in our business when it comes to that. So hopefully, you know, people are getting help when they need it, and let's get through it, and we'll be back to this thing in no time. Now a couple of things. I have a game called the Espresso Shot. Okay. So I want to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions. You give me your take on it, and we'll go from there. All right. So this is the Espresso Shot with John Guarneri from Spear Talk podcast and Silver Spear Security. Here we go. Your favorite coffee region.
Is this okay? So this is worldwide.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to go either Southwest United States or South America, probably the Brazil, that region right there.
Favorite coffee brand.
Oh God. If I'm in Canada, it's Timmy Hortons, because I love the little lid games you guys do. if I'm Massachusetts, it's Dunkin' Donuts. It's a big chain. It's just local. It's on every stupid street corner. But if I'm going chain,
doesn't have to be a chain. It can be a brand, like, you know, it can be a brand that you've discovered around the world that's undeniable every time you go.
I tell you what, every time I go to like a Michael's or TJ Maxx, I buy the Kona brand coffee.
It's Kona
discount coffee. Yep. I actually really like that coffee.
Kona's good. Yep.
La Lifra. I'm terrible with names. It comes in the yellow package with the red lettering.
Interesting.
La Lifra.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to find it.
I have a bag of it. If it was close to me, I'd show it. But I would say that.
Somebody that you think is coming to you and says, John, I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. What should I do? How do I start? Where do I go?
I would actually maybe. Okay. So am I giving you a place or like how would I?
Nope.
Would
tell if you're them? Like, if you're telling somebody, like, if you're going to start in coffee for the first time, you've never had a cup of coffee, this is how I think you should start.
I would start giving them a generic run of the mill, cup of coffee from a generic measure. It's Folgers or one of those.
Okay. And
an 8-10 cup coffee maker. Pour them a cup. Try it without any cream or sugar. And then I want their reaction to be, oh, this is pretty good. And then you bring them to a top echelon type place, whether it is a pour over or even something where it's – I don't hate Starbucks, but – they've definitely got the market on what they think is crazy. It appeases those people. But then take them up an echelon and kind of go off of there, because I need to know what their baseline is in terms of what a good cup of coffee is.
And is there a coffee myth that you feel like you want to debunk?
Growing up, I always was that. Was it the Folgers where the guy would mm-hmm. have the donkey with the bag of beans on the back?
No, that's Juan Valdez.
But what was the coffee brand?
Juan Valdez was the coffee brand in South America. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that was growing up. I always saw that, and he would come to the window and hit the donkey with the thing. And I'm just kind of like, do they really use donkeys to transport these beans? Like, do they even travel with beads, bags of beans?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that the big thing that's on in that small roaster market in the, the roasters are very conscious of what's happening with the local market, what's happening with the farmers, are they being compensated properly? So right. To your point, it's a big deal to a lot of people, a lot of roasters, to make sure that everyone's being compensated properly. So maybe they are using donkeys, maybe they are using them in some of these smaller markets, but hopefully they are being compensated for it properly and everyone's winning. So
what's always fascinated me is that before technology and all these machines would help with the harvest, these men and women would actually go through there and by hand. It kind of blows your mind, the actual from growing to planting and harvesting to getting that to your cup of coffee, whether it's a K-cup or a ground up in your coffee thing. Like it's kind of a really intricate, amazing process.
That's the espresso shot with John Guarneri of Silver Spear and Spear Talk podcast. So we're going to wrap in a little bit. I appreciate your time today, buddy. Tell me about what's been going on with you as far as your show goes and everything that you've been doing, because you've got some growth here. I just showed this. You've got 4,000 new subscribers. That was like, I guess just about a month and a bit ago,
yep.
A bunch of new views, almost a million minutes watched. You're doing some really great stuff. What's been the secret to the growth of your show? Because I know, and was it when you joined the network, it was kind of, you know, it was doing this. And then since then, I'm just seeing some massive growth out of your show. So where do you think that's coming from? And I'm not saying I'm not saying your content isn't amazing. I'm just saying it's really taken off here.
We kind of talked about this before we started. I jumped on here, but I think what I found is taking me probably 8 months. It's been a year now, but 8 months to realize that content is king, and you have to put out a product that people know are going to come every time of the week. So you got to build up the schedule. So for me, every week for the last year, I have put out mm-hmm. 1 to 2, and there's been a couple of weeks. Or there's been a 2 week period later up this past year where I put out 18 hours of episodes of content. And mm-hmm. so for me, it's just putting out the content. They know every Thursday at 7 p.m. now that they can jump on and see whoever the guest is. And what helps me is that every one of my guests is completely different. It could be an actor, it could be a martial artist, it could be a wildlife conservationist, it could be a National Geographic photographer. This mm-hmm. could be a victim of domestic abuse or a former FBI informant. And we just have a healthy conversation. And it helps too that when I reach out to these guests and I reach out to people I want to talk to ask the questions I want to ask,
yeah.
It helps that they're part of it too. And they want to be part of this and just be themselves. And it helps when they're putting out the content too. They're sharing the images or the coming soon or sharing the video links. And I have a very loyal fan base. I just launched the YouTube memberships on my thing. And that the first been 4 or 5 days, the numbers are staggering, the people that pay for extra content. So now I'm putting out extra shows every week, and
right.
I'm giving them behind the scenes content of flubs and mistakes from interviews, or say I'm done recording an episode, then I had to have another 45 minutes of content from that guest that I'm just going to put out there for those people just to really see what goes into each of these episodes. And like you have to do research and you have to do all this other stuff that a lot of people don't see outside the video. And so I found that there's value in just presenting everything you do, whether it is your actual notes or the extra content. And people want to hear healthy conversations. I think it helped that I did mine, like most people, at the start of the COVID pandemic, where people are sitting at home. But I found that, honestly, more people are tuning in now. And that's kind of why I had to move my premieres to nighttime, because people are actually back to work now. So it's just, honestly, man, it's literally putting in the time, believing in your product, and you got to treat it like it's a kid or a partner, a job or something, because if you don't believe in what you're putting out, how do you expect anyone else to kind of believe that either?
I 100% agree. You got to be passionate. This is our passion. I love the fact that you've got such a storied history in federal security. But move that on to the artist world of security. I'm sure there's similarities between the two of them. I'm guessing if I asked you which one do you like better, you know, it's a tough answer for you because I'm sure they both offer the same thing. But why don't I throw that out there before we wrap this thing up? Which world do you enjoy better?
I enjoy this world now, which is the private security, if only for the sheer fact that taking out the security aspect and doing protection, all the stuff I love, no matter what I chose to do, I find I have more time, even though the days when I'm working are 18, 20 hour days, I still have time to do cool stuff and still see the world. And this private security enables me to do shows like yours or do other passions that I couldn't have done. Like I could have done a podcast with the federal government because I don't have the time and they wouldn't allow it. So I feel like I can put and do more stuff that I want to do, all while still doing and loving what I do as security.
Can you go back to it if you wanted to, or do you have to go through all the training again?
So basically if you leave within 2 years, I think you could go back, but you have to re-up on training. And then after the age of 37, I think there's an age cutoff. There wasn't when I was in there. So I mean, I would actually, if I wanted to, I'd have to resubmit. I turned 37 next year. So maybe, but I don't have any urge to go back
there. Right. Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to have a coffee, a really great, great, great coffee around the world somewhere again. I saw, I missed you you guys were with Alter Bridge. I was in Birmingham at that show, and we didn't know each other then. That was funny how it kind of worked, that we just sort of had this yep. mix, and then now here we are together on the same network, the DeanBlundell.com network. Basically, in similar circumstances, you've created this amazing podcast that I encourage everyone to go listen to because it just covers so many things. Where can everyone find you online?
This is the toughest question because I always
sure
Instagram and Facebook are at Spear Talk Podcast. Twitter is Spear Talk, and then if you just go to YouTube, type in Spear Talk Security Podcast, it should pop right up. Website's coming. That will house the episodes and all that stuff. But yeah, we're just, if you're in the mood for something different, some episode, I got episodes coming up with famous actors, different martial artists. I got some really cool former mafia people coming on the show. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Different graphic designers. I got the illustrator for the show or the book Goosebumps coming on, which is the reason why I wanted this whole idea of good guy versus bad guy. So I bring on guests that kind of shaped my childhood and kind of who I am today and kind of tied into the world of security and just have really healthy, fun conversations.
Yeah. Well, the growth is amazing to watch. I've been watching from the sides and I'm really, really happy with how you're doing, buddy. And I appreciate you making the time to come on today to talk a little bit of coffee, a little bit of Secret Service, and a little bit of our world of music and when it may come back.
No, so. And I appreciate it. I can't thank you and Dean and everyone there. That's really awesome. There's so many. I never really follow. I mean, besides Joe Rogan podcast before the pandemic, I didn't really have put the thought in to look for some of the stuff. But you could go on the Dean Blundell Network and you can learn from not only myself or yourself or your Escalator podcast, or mm-hmm. you can learn about gambling. You can learn about these two girls, the Fucked Up podcast, which is hilarious. There's all these other different podcasts and stuff out there. The Nerd yeah. Dad podcast. So it's like, it's one of those cool things where like literally every point of view, every left, right, up, down, whatever, you can go to the Dean Blundell show network and just really dig your heels in and just learn some awesome stuff and just really absorb really unique content. And it's pretty fucking cool.
That's part of it. And you've done a killer job. You're one of our fastest growing pods on the network. And if not the fastest growing pod on the network, for sure. It's definitely there. That's John Guarnari. Thanks, buddy. That's from Spear Talk. We'll see you on the road somewhere. Hi to our buddy Hoogie if you're watching. How you doing there, buddy? Barry Kirch, who was my episode one guest on the Music Cast from Shinedown. Hello to him and check out his coffee at Spartan Brews. This whole thing brought to you by our friends at Blue Microphones. John's got a pair of the Mixify headphones. We've both got the Yeti X. So a huge thanks to them. for jumping into the mix. There they are right there, and trying to make us sound really, really great. And everyone, try to find John online in all the places that he said. Tune in to his podcast every week, and on YouTube every week. So that's John. I'm Brenton. Thanks, everybody. Until next week.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.